In unity, every moment is as it should be. The shadow of the past does not spoil the fullness that is only possible in present time. The voice of inner truth says, my desires are part of this moment, and what I need is provided here and now. Number 3, uncertainty is part of the overall order of things. Certainty and uncertainty are two aspects of your own nature. At one level, things have to be certain, or order couldn't exist. At another level, things have to be uncertain, or there would be no newness. Evolution moves forward by surprising events. At one level, things have to be certain, or order couldn't exist. At another level, things have to be uncertain, or there would be no newness. Evolution moves forward by surprising events. The healthiest attitude is to realize that the unknown is just another word for creation. In unity, a person sees the wisdom of uncertainty. He realizes that out of this total openness, order is still maintained. Opposites can and must coexist. The voice of inner truth says, I embrace the unknown because it allows me to see new aspects of myself. Number 4, change is the basis of non-change. Your desires and attention guide the path of your own growth. Because attention is always flowing, the dance never ends. When you realize that you are held securely within this fluid yet unchanging framework, the joy of free will arises. All possibilities are acceptable to the field, since by definition, the field is a state of all possibilities. The voice of inner truth says, I am getting to know the absolute by playing here in the relative. And number 5, entropy holds no threat because it is under the control of infinite organizing power. Your body reflects the simultaneity of order and chaos. The molecules of food, air, and water swirling through your blood move chaotically, but when they enter a cell, they are used with precise orderliness. Chaos, then, is just a point of view. In unity, you realize that every step into decay, dissolution, and destruction is being used to organize new patterns of order. The voice of inner truth says, through alternating steps of loss and gain, silence and activity, birth and death, I walk the path of immortality. These are descriptions only. No words can substitute for the personal realization, which I have called the voice of inner truth, as it unfolds for every individual. But it takes satisfying answers about who you are and why you are here to bring inner discontent to an end. In its true nature, life is comfortable, easy, unforced, and intuitively right. This means that the self-realized state is the most natural one to be in. The accumulation of stress, along with the aging that it produces, indicates that strain and discomfort are still present. The following section is devoted to ending the struggle by the practice that finally works, learning to accept your life not as a series of random events, but as a path of awakening whose purpose is maximum joy and fulfillment. Living with life's uncertainty makes constant demands upon everyone's coping mechanisms. There are basically two ways to cope with uncertainty: acceptance and resistance. Acceptance is healthy because it permits you to clear any stress as soon as it occurs. Resistance is unhealthy because it builds up residues of frustrated feelings, false expectations, and unfulfilled desires. In the following exercises, we will see how to restore your awareness to a state of acceptance so that living in the present is as fulfilling as it should be. Exercise 1. Freeing your interpretations. Your life can only be as free as your perception of it. Whenever we look at a situation, we see our past in it. If spiders frightened you as a child, you will project that fear onto spiders today. Just to realize that you are placing an interpretation on everything is an important step towards freeing yourself from the past. The stress response is broken into 3 parts: the introduction of a threat, appraisal of the situation, and the body's triggering of the fight or flight response. stage two, appraisal, is the only stage in which you can control your body's reaction. Once you have interpreted a situation as a threat, your body will automatically give some kind of stress reaction. So it's important to question your interpretation. The only way stress can end is if you perceive it to end. In my personal approach, 5 steps have been immensely helpful. Step 1. Realize that you have an interpretation. In a conflicting situation, I tell myself that my viewpoint is limited. I don't have a patent on the truth. Step 2. Set aside the old mindset. When I feel tense, I take this as a signal that I'm holding on too tight to my point of view. Step 3. Look at things from a new perspective. I focus on the feelings in my body, and inevitably, my mind starts to see things slightly differently. Step 4. Question your interpretation to see if it is still valid. And step 5. Focus on process, not outcome. Stress always arises if you concentrate on how something has to turn out. I remind myself that I don't need to know where I'm going to enjoy the road I'm on. When I successfully go through these 5 steps, the daily annoyances that create inappropriate stress dissolve very quickly. The exercise is to read and think about these 5 steps for changing an interpretation and then apply them. Apply these techniques to a troubling event from your past. Find someone who hurt your feelings very badly and whom you cannot forgive. The 5 steps might carry you into this line of reasoning. 1. I feel hurt, but that doesn't mean that the other person was bad or meant to hurt me. There's always another side to the story. 2. I've been hurt like this before, and therefore maybe I was too quick to judge this incident. I need to see each thing as it is. 3. I don't need to see myself as a victim here. When I was on the other side of the same situation, wasn't I caught up in my own motives? 4. Let me forget my feelings for a second. How did that other person feel? Perhaps they just lost control or were just too wrapped up in their own world to notice my hurt. 5. This incident can help me. Rather than blaming this other person or getting even, I want to find out the kinds of things that create threat in me. When you begin to get into the habit of consciously and carefully examining your old interpretations in this way, you create a space for spontaneous moments of freedom, when your old mindset clears in a flash of insight. With it comes a sense of revelation, because you're looking into reality itself, not a reflection of your past. All the most valuable things in life, love, compassion, beauty, forgiveness, inspiration, must come to us spontaneously. We can only prepare the way for them. Exercise 2. Peeling the onion of the past. The past is layered into us in many intricate layers. Your inner world is full of complex relationships, for it not only contains the past as it occurred, but all the ways in which you have mentally revised the past, escaping into fantasy, revenge, yearning, self-reproach, and guilt. To get rid of these distractions, you need to realize that there is a deeper place where everything is all right. In Siddhartha, Hermann Hesse writes, "Within you, there is a stillness and a sanctuary to which you can retreat at any time and be yourself. This sanctuary is a simple awareness of comfort, which can't be violated by the turmoil of events. It is the mental space that one seeks to find in meditation, which I believe to be one of the most important pursuits anyone can follow. Even if you do not meditate, you can get to this place of calm with the following exercise. Take a piece of paper and a pencil and write down this affirmation. I am perfect as I am. Everything in my life is working toward my ultimate good. I am loved and I am love." Do not pause to analyze the statement, just write it down. When you come to the end, shut your eyes and let any response surface that comes to mind. Now write down the first words that came to you. Your first thought is likely to contain a lot of resistance, because no one's life is perfect, and it is hard to believe that everything is working out as it should. If your response shows an emotion, it's an honest one. Now, without pausing, write the same statement again, shut your eyes, and once more put down the first words that come to mind. Do not stop to analyze or dwell on your reaction. Continue the process until you have repeated the affirmation and your response 12 times. You will be surprised at how much your reactions change, and for most people, the last reaction will be much more positive than the first. Essentially, this exercise allows you to eavesdrop on the innermost levels of your own awareness. Most people have the highest resistance at the surface of their minds, because this is where your most public and guarded reactions operate. Going deeper, we hit levels of the most recent frustrations, wishes, and unreleased emotions. When you touch these layers, quite unexpected or irrational reactions can come out. Deeper still are the layers where your deepest permanent feelings are stored. If you feel basically unlovable, there could be a lot of resistance at this level. But beneath even the most rigid conditioning, there's a layer of awareness that agrees without equivocation to the words, I am love. This technique is extremely powerful for reminding yourself about your own nature. But more than that, it reminds you of your purpose, which is to grow to the point where I am love is at the surface of your consciousness, not buried in the dark depths. Exercise 3, living in the present. Everything you think and feel reflects who you are. If you think and feel from a superficial level of awareness, that is who you are. To dive deeper into yourself, and hopefully to get to that place where you are love, compassion, trust, and truth, you have to follow the path of your present responses. Someone who feels unloved can still find love in its purest form, but he will have to work through the layers of resistance that blocks the feeling of pure love. He does not really live in the present. Stripped to the basics, emotions arouse only two sensations, pain and pleasure. We all want to avoid pain and pursue pleasure. Therefore, all the complicated emotional states we find ourselves in are the result of not being able to obey those basic drives. Buried hurt disguises itself as anger, anxiety, guilt, and depression. The only way to deal with these layers of pain is to find out what hurts as the pain occurs, deal with it, and move on. Living in the present means being honest enough to avoid the easy emotion, which is anger, and expose the hurt that is harder to confront. This next exercise is learning the steps of how to feel in the present. Firstly, realize that hurt is the most basic negative feeling. You cannot be in the present without feeling hurt. Secondly, be with your sensation. Resist the impulse either to deny what you feel or turn it into anger. Thirdly, say what you feel to the person who caused the hurt. And finally, resolve your emotion and move on. This exercise may seem like an exercise in suffering, but in fact, it is an exercise in freedom. Being hurt isn't desirable, but it is real. It puts you in the present, whereas conditioned responses of anger, anxiety, guilt, and depression put you out of the present. Once you are in the present, you can follow the trail of your emotions back to their source, which is not pain, but love, compassion, truth, the real you. The reason this exercise defeats aging is that it puts you back into the present, and present moment awareness never ages. The discovery of freedom in the present opens the door for the permanent experience of timelessness, in which past, present, and future are revealed as illusions compared to the true reality, which is always here and now. I've never met Belle Odom, but I'm holding her picture in front of me, printed in the morning newspaper. She's a tiny old lady, smiling and waving a lace handkerchief. Belle is in the paper because she has achieved the remarkable age of 109. Despite the fact that she is older than several states in the Union, her eyes look sharp and alert. The accompanying article says that her mind is better than that of many younger residents at the nursing home where she lives. The article rattles off some statistics about people who live to be 100 or more. 80% of all centenarians are women. 75% are widowed. 50% are in nursing homes. 16% are black. The general population is only 12% black. Belle happens to be a black woman born and raised in rugged Texas farm country. Until she turned 100, she lived alone in a cabin without running water. Now she is the star resident of a Houston nursing home. At 109, Belle has moved far beyond biological probability into a mysterious and uncertain survival. In the next few decades, barring a premature heart attack, cancer, auto accident, homicide, or suicide, you and I are likely going to make it to 85 and 90. Think of yourself at 50. The day you turn 50 is going to be your second birth. In all likelihood, a complete lifetime lies ahead of you, lasting at least 30 and more likely 40, 50, or even 60 years. The great advantage of your second birth is that you can plan ahead. Your first birth was thrown at you, complete with an awkward, unformed body that had to be trained from scratch to perform the simplest tasks, and a bewildering world of chaotic sights and sounds your brain had to mold into something that made sense. Fired by the possibility of planning a whole new lifetime, I decided to take the opportunity seriously. I set aside all the stereotypes of old age and approached my second birth, which is only 4 years away, with a wish list. What would I want should I live to be 100? Immediately, the following desires came to mind. I want to survive even longer if possible. I want to remain healthy. I want a clear, alert mind. I want to be active. I want to have achieved wisdom. As soon as I wrote these desires down, a surprising thing happened. They all seemed within my reach. I know what to do to be healthy, and remaining active is fully within my control. With this simple list, I had turned survival from a threat into a desirable goal, because on my list were things I truly wanted. In this section, I want to examine these new concepts in the hopes of finding the most essential ones, the keys to longevity that hold true for most, if not all, people. Most of us have not met many people who are over 100 years old. Today, one person in 10,000 passes the century mark, and the ratio is rising faster than any other growth statistic in the population. The general physical attributes of centenarians are as follows. Not seriously overweight or underweight. Little weight fluctuation over their lifetime. Good general muscle tone. Good grip. Young appearance to the skin. Still drives a car and engages in physical activity. psychological characteristics are these: superior native intelligence, keen interest in current events, good memory, freedom from anxiety, few illnesses, not prone to worry, independence of choice in their vocations. They tend to be their own bosses, have more freedom than the organization man. The majority do not retire early. They have the capacity to enjoy life. Most have a degree of optimism and a marked sense of humor, responding to the simple pleasures available to them. Great adaptability. Most prefer living in the present with its many changes. There is no preoccupation with death. They live with satisfaction from day to day. They have a sense of religion in the broad sense, but no extreme orthodoxy. Moderate eating, diets generally high in protein, low in fats. They are early risers with an average sleep period of 6 to 7 hours. They're mostly non-smokers. There's low usage of medication, and most are coffee drinkers. I'd like to touch on a few of the physical characteristics on the list. Maintaining a steady weight throughout life seems to be more important than whether one is over or underweight. This sounds rather insignificant, but it may turn out to have deep implications. Weight is inevitably bound up with self-image. At a young age, many people, both men and women, learn to use dieting as a quick fix for a poor self-image. Yet the fact that either gaining or losing weight shortens one's lifespan makes me speculate that poor self-esteem is the real culprit. The subjects who maintained a steady weight are likely to be psychologically steady as well. This is their saving virtue, not their weight per se. Regarding strong grip and good muscle tone, we need to look deeper into how much activity is actually needed to make a significant contribution to longevity. In clinical tests, it is no surprise that the least active people have the highest death rates. Mortality for sedentary men was more than 3 times higher than for the fittest men, while inactive women had a mortality rate more than 5 times higher than the fittest women. What is surprising is that the greatest advantage comes with much lower rates of activity. Someone who walks 30 minutes a day, 6 days a week, enjoys a mortality rate almost as low as someone who ran 30 or 40 miles per week. As long as you can perform regular minimal activity, the equivalent of walking half an hour a day, you are gaining most of the longevity benefits conferred to exercise. You can be active by making the bed, climbing stairs, walking to lunch instead of taking a taxi, carrying a bag of groceries home on foot, and so on. The goal of half an hour's activity a day is surprisingly easy to reach. It's just a matter of being on the lookout. Although diet was not a distinguishing feature of our centenarians, improper diet is clearly linked with disease and premature aging. The most recent statistics indicate that the typical American diet consists of 40% fat, 130 pounds of white sugar per year, and 3 to 5 times more salt than the body actually needs. It cannot be accidental that 86% of Americans over 65 are afflicted with one or more degenerative disorders: heart disease, cancer, arthritis, diabetes, and osteoporosis. Although long considered diseases of old age, we now view them more accurately as lifestyle diseases. There are now alarming signs of these disorders in people under 50 and even young children. For centuries, the literature of longevity has been filled with testimony about the virtue of strict dietary abstinence. In addition to potentially increasing lifespans, another advantage of dietary restriction is its avoidance of useless calories and processed foods. On a regimen of 1,200 to 1,500 calories a day, there is no room for cakes, hamburgers, and french fries. Sugar and fat have to be excised to make room for an abundance of whole foods. This makes a good deal of sense. The rampant degenerative disease that afflicts our society in old age indicates that we are being held back from the long, healthy lifespans that few achieve. Yet it seems to me that centenarians tend to be far ahead of the gerontologists in what they know about living. There's something woefully lacking in any fragmentary approach to life, however intriguing any single fragment happens to be. Dietary restriction doesn't address the rich psychology of humans, and what we know about longevity so far indicates that this factor is extremely important. However, this emphasis on personal qualities of heart and mind is at odds with current gerontology, which is infatuated with youth hormones and genetic engineering. We need to evaluate this perspective and ask why our portrayal of real-life centenarians has been so far removed from the kind of longevity achieved in test tubes. Something disturbing lies beneath the surface of the wild-eyed predictions made by geneticists with regard to aging. Americans like to imagine that technical ingenuity will solve any problem. The theory is that given a little biochemical retooling, our bodies can be made more efficient, less prone to breakdowns, and slower to wear out. If any field was dedicated to the proposition that the body is mindless and inherently defective, this is it. Like other reductionist models, the genetic view of aging ignores life as a whole. There are examples of societies where longevity has been highly valued, and it is here, in a real-life setting, that we find our best laboratory. Abkhazia, a far-flung mountain region of southern Russia, is a land of almost mystical old age. It is the only place I have ever heard of where there's a separate word for great-great-great-grandparents, which is applied only to the living, not to someone who has died. These rural villagers, almost all of them illiterate field workers, have been reputed to have reached incredible ages of 120, 130, and upwards of 170 years old. Abkhazia boasted five times as many centenarians as any part of the world, and 80% of the long living, the word old was never applied to them, were active and vigorous. It was common for both men and women to work in the local tea fields for decades past the official retirement age of 60. Champion tea pickers were given certificates when they reached 100. For centuries, Abkhazia had been a place where sedentary retirement was unknown except in cases of disability. Love of hard work was deeply ingrained among the Abkhazians, and records showed that a woman of 109 was paid for 49 full work days in the tea fields one summer. The population subsisted on homegrown vegetables and dairy products, with small amounts of nuts, grains, and meat to round out the fare. Total intake of fat and calories was unusually low by Western standards, between 1,500 and 2,000 calories a day, and it was customary for people to walk distances of up to 20 miles a day. In America, we are facing a huge increase in all age groups over 65, and the long-lived Abkhazians look more and more fascinating. In their culture, the new old age has existed for generations. They traditionally led lives in which all the right ingredients came together for conscious, purposeful longevity, not just the longevity of survivors, but of youth in old age. Abkhazians struck Western visitors as remarkably attuned to the rhythms of life, precisely what we have lost in this country. One gets the sense of a people who have reached a natural balance. Rather than struggling to break unhealthy habits, their culture has woven health into their overall view of life. In every society, expectation rules outcome. In a culture where wealth is the highest goal, the entire society will focus on making money. Prestige will accrue to those who make the most, and the poor will be regarded as failures. In Abkhazia, a great value was placed on longevity, and therefore the entire society felt motivated to live up to that ideal. In America, the reverse is true. Old age is not valued, much less exalted. Huge differences divide American and Abkhazian culture. A life of light eating and lifelong physical activity is now something we have to consciously learn again. But fixating on those ingredients would miss the spirit of Abkhazia, which to me is far more inspiring as a motivation to survive to 100. Meanwhile, this country has developed a boom in centenarians that is unparalleled. Clearly, we have won the struggle for longevity and now face the challenge of becoming a land where the long living are still young. Comparatively speaking, most of us would find it easier to bear the physical afflictions of old age than the mental ones. In India, where I grew up, age is still equated with wisdom. In the West, the longer one lives, the more one is suspected of mental incompetence. Alzheimer's has probably surpassed cancer for the dubious honor of being the most feared disease in America. I know 60-year-olds who obsessively pore over articles about Alzheimer's and panic whenever they forget a friend's telephone number. So convinced are they that contracting Alzheimer's is only a matter of time. Aging alone is not enough to cause Alzheimer's or other brain disorders. Over time, the structure of the brain is known to change. It grows lighter, for example, and shrinks slightly. Yet at present, it isn't known why one old brain stays lively and creative while another starts to deteriorate. One encouraging finding, however, is that by living a full mental life, older people may actually be growing new dendrites, brain neural connections, all the time. This good news about the aging brain lifts our expectations that keeping one's faculties intact is completely normal. Older people may not be as quick in time tests, neuroscientist Robert Terry remarks, but they don't lose judgment, orientation, or vocabulary. There is no way that people like Picasso, the cellist Pablo Casals, or Martha Graham could have continued to be successful on half a brain. The topic of aging and IQ is a perfect example of how linear thinking distorts the complex changes time brings. The human mind develops with experience. Brain studies indicate that organic changes keep up with the mind in its journey of expansion. The mind clearly wants to expand. Psychologists are beginning to verify that human development extends into old age through higher states of awareness, that any decline in the brain's physical structure with age is offset by new mental accomplishments. While certain memory tasks may slow down, it seems that wisdom is a software achievement that culture uses to outwit biological limits. As the new old age obliterates the prejudice against old people, I believe we will witness a flowering of the visionary qualities that age can bring at its best. Vision is the hidden bond that unites youth and old age. In middle age, we compromise our ideals in order to achieve success and security. The young are still impetuously idealistic, and the old can balance and enhance that through wisdom, perhaps the greatest gift of old age. Most people assume that medicine has been chiefly responsible for improving the health of old people and extending their lifespan. Therefore, they look in the same direction for cures to cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, and other degenerative disorders as the solution to old age. This ignores the fact that successful aging is far more important than the avoidance of disease, although that is important also. It involves a lifelong commitment that is renewed every day. A doctor can assist in making this commitment, but medicine is not a surrogate for it. Longevity is still an individual achievement. It comes primarily to those whose expectations are high enough to reach for it. Fortunately, few normal signs of aging have gone unchallenged, and major studies have proven that we have expected far too little of the aging body, which still holds great potential for improvement at very advanced ages. Most studies have confirmed one main point. Everyone grows more unique with age, and that uniqueness includes the possibility for improvement on any front. The new paradigm tells us that we are constantly making and unmaking our bodies at the quantum level, which means that we are constantly unfolding hidden potential. If we consider how to improve physical and mental function every day for the rest of our lives, three values emerge that must be part of everyone's intention. Number one, longevity itself, since life is a primary good. Number two, creative experience, which keeps life interesting and makes us want more of it. And number three, wisdom, which is the collected reward of long life. It's impossible to set any limits on what can be achieved in each area. Creativity and wisdom inspired Picasso, Shaw, Michelangelo, and Tolstoy, and other long-lived geniuses until the day they died. Psychologists who study creativity say that artists and writers often can produce more new ideas in their 60s or 70s than in their 20s. One interesting variable is that the later you take up any creative pursuit, the more likely that it will last into old age. A sense of active mastery is the ego state most clearly associated with longevity, writes David Gutman, aging researcher at the University of Michigan. Active mastery means having autonomy over one's own life and circumstances, not power over others. The most meaningful thing you can live for is to reach your full potential. These latent potentials are closed off to the vast majority of people who barely have skills to fill 65 years of existence. Therefore, it is extremely important to begin to develop your skills consciously, breaking free of social expectations and setting yourself the goal of becoming a master. To help you carve out your own ideal life, I have listed 10 keys to active mastery. They summarize much of what we have learned so far about aging and awareness. They are also meant to be practical ideals, ones you can aspire to in action every day. So let's examine these 10 keys to active mastery. Number 1. Listen to your body's wisdom, which expresses itself through signals of comfort and discomfort. When choosing a certain behavior, ask your body, "How do you feel about this?" If the body sends a signal of physical or emotional distress, watch out. If the body sends a signal of comfort and eagerness, then proceed. Number 2. Live in the present. It is the only moment you have. Have your attention on what is here and now. Look for the fullness in every moment. Accept what comes to you totally and completely so that you can appreciate it, learn from it, and then let it go. Don't struggle against the infinite scheme of things. Be at one with it. Number 3. Take time to be silent, to meditate, and quiet the internal dialogue. In moments of silence, realize that you are recontacting your source of pure awareness. Pay attention to your inner life so that you can be guided by intuition rather than externally imposed interpretations of what is or isn't good for you. 4. Relinquish your need for external approval. You alone are the judge of your worth, and your goal is to discover infinite worth in yourself, no matter what anyone else thinks. There is great freedom in this choice. 5. When you find yourself reacting with anger or opposition to any person or circumstance, realize that you are only struggling with yourself. When you release the anger rooted in old hurts, you will be healing yourself and cooperating with the unimpeded flow of the universe. 6. Know that the world out there reflects your reality in here. The people you react to most strongly, whether with love or hate, are projections of your inner world. What you most hate is what you most deny in yourself. What you love is what you most wish for in yourself. Use the mirror of relationships to guide your own evolution. Then what you most want will automatically be there, and what you most deny will heal itself. 7. Shed the burden of judgment. You will feel much lighter. Judgment imposes right and wrong on situations that just are. In judging others, you reflect your own lack of self-acceptance. Remember that every person you forgive adds to your own self-love. 8. Don't contaminate your body with toxins, either through food, drink, or toxic emotions. The health of every cell directly contributes to your state of well-being because every cell is a point of awareness within you. 9. Replace fear-motivated behavior with love-motivated behavior. Fear is the product of memory, which dwells in the past. Wiping out the threat of being hurt will happen when you find the security of your own being, which is love. And number 10, understand that the physical world is just a mirror of a deeper intelligence. Intelligence is the invisible organizer of all matter and energy, and you share in the organizing power of the cosmos. Living in balance and purity is the highest good for you and the earth. Life is a creative enterprise. There are many levels of creation, and therefore many levels of possible mastery. Active mastery is not just a way to survive to extreme old age, it is the road to freedom. At its most complete, active mastery means handling the whole of life. It is a process of integration, for ordinarily many aspects of the mind are quite separate from and out of tune with the body, and both are separate from spirit. Bringing all these ingredients back into unity can be accomplished only at very deep levels of awareness through meditation, when the duality of mind and body are transcended. But meditation is performed in the special time set aside from it. How do we integrate the remaining hours of our active daily life? Thousands of years ago, the ancient Indian sages gave an answer in the form of prana, the subtlest form of biological energy. Prana is present in every mental and physical event. It flows directly from spirit or pure awareness to bring intelligence and consciousness to every aspect of life. The importance of life energy has been recognized in many cultural traditions. The Chinese know it as qi, and other names appear in Sufism, mystic Christianity, and the teachings of ancient Egypt. What is more important than definitions, however, is to get experiential knowledge of it. If you can experience prana, you can begin to nurture and preserve it. Depleted prana is directly linked to aging and death. Nothing can remain alive when prana is absent, because prana is intelligence and consciousness, the two vital ingredients that animate physical matter. In India, the body is perceived first as a product of consciousness and only secondarily as a material object. Conserving prana is considered extremely important, and the ancient teachings give the following basic rules to ensure balanced and vital prana in the body at all ages. Fresh food, pure water and air, sunlight, moderate exercise, balanced, refined breathing, non-violent behavior and a reverence for life, loving, positive emotions, free expression of emotions. Think of the difference between a salad fresh picked from your garden and one made from the same vegetables bought in the supermarket. Contrast a picnic in the mountains with lunch at a hamburger stand. Freshness indicates the presence of prana. Staleness indicates its absence. The one factor least understood in our culture is balanced breath, which in India is considered the most important. Breath is the junction point between mind, body and spirit. Every change of mental state will be reflected in the breath and then the body. Paying attention to the breath is a vehicle for releasing stress and allowing the body to find its own balance. Once in balance, breathing is spontaneous and refined, so that the refined emotions of love and devotion can be carried throughout the body at all levels. When your cells experience the fullness of prana, they are receiving the physical equivalent of these emotions.